On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers because frickin' duh. Ohtani is currently in Miami hanging out with me, hitting home runs at Lone Depot Park. That's just him. I don't do that. We chatted about why Ohtani might not be pitching in the way that you think. Jordan will explain to me why the Mariners offense has been so sensational. And then we'll talk about why we should be hired as hitting coaches for a major league team right now. It's Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that cannot wait to play as Connor Norby in GTA 6. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and I would argue that the Miami Marlins are, in and of themselves, a vice.
I should have worn my Marlins hat today. I know you're the one in Miami, but with the drop of that GTA 6 trailer, you're right, man. Although at this point, I'm starting to wonder, you know, when the Orioles and Marlins made that trade, I think everyone was wondering, will you be able to play as Connor Norby or as Kyle Stowers? And right now, I think Kyle Stowers is a more likely pick. At this stage, I know he's California through and through, but we might have to get Stowers' power into GTA 6.
Forget Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. I want Grand Theft Auto Peter Bendix. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are going to talk about me being in Miami. Why am I here? Hint, it's not for the Marlins. The Dodgers are in town here in South Florida, and I wanted to see them because they're the most important team. So I've been around the Dodgers the last 2 days, and I have enough takeaways to fill a storage locker. We're also going to try and figure out what the heck is going on with the Seattle Mariners, who cannot stop hitting the baseball hard. And then we'll hop in a stolen vehicle and swing around the league. The Rangers have a new hitting coach. The Blue Jays signed some players. And MLB is remembering some guys on the field in person.
But let's start in Miami, Jake. Our opener is those Dodgers in Miami.
So here's the deal. Two games into the series is three games set. And it's split. Marlins one, Dodgers one.
So, of course, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. The rubber match will be later on today. And the conclusion of the series, which technically the season series, which the Dodgers have already won because they swept the Marlins last week, if I recall correctly. But the Marlins getting another walk-off win. They've had their fair share of walk-offs here early on in the season.
You know
it
why?
It seems like, yeah, why is that?
Because they're not winning by a lot of runs.
No. They're not into the whole blowout thing. That's reserved right for good teams for the most part. But hey, the Marlins have been frisky in some respects and horrific in others. I have some Marlins thoughts also, but obviously let's focus on the Dodgers. So what have been your takeaways? There have been some interesting roster maneuverings. You've got to see kind of the beginning of Haesung Kim's, you know, career as a Dodger, and he's certainly a compelling character that we thought we would be talking about more during this season, and we haven't really seen it all of his first month, and now he's a part of this team. So where do you want to start? We could also start with that Ohtani fella who I know you just wrote about might go 50-50 again. Let's do the obvious.
Ohtani has now played, I believe, 7 major league games in Lone Depot Park, and he has 6 home runs. That does not include the brilliance he displayed in the WBC, closing out the final game against Team USA. And I forgot that he hit a humongous double in the semifinal against Mexico when Japan was losing in the 9th inning. For whatever reason, he loves playing in Marlins Park. Now, I think the biggest reason he likes playing in Marlins Park is that when you play in Marlins Park or Lone Depot Park, you get to play against the Marlins.
Yeah,
that's a huge benefit of it. So last night, Ohtani hit his 10th homer of the year, moonshot. 2 nights ago, he hit a low laser beam into the bullpen in right field. The apex difference, like in feet, between those two homers was 65 feet. One was 115, the other one was 50. It's like an outrageous difference.
And that first one was, I believe, 118 exit velo, which is just like a reminder that he exists in a different tier of raw power than most other players. Again, we've talked about this on the show before. There are only so many hitters physically capable of hitting a ball that hard, and he's one of them.
It was the hardest hit ball of his season and the hardest hit home run of the MLB season. Full stop.
Oh, there you go.
So far. Now, last night, that home run he clanked was his 10th. To go along with 10 steals. And because we as a society adore round numbers, and because Shohei Ohtani was here in Miami where he went 50-50 in what was maybe the greatest single day performance ever, it made me think, is he going to just do this again? And the answer is probably.
The answer is he's certainly in position to do so. Now, I think... it's interesting because there was a brief little stop there. It's so funny with Ohtani because we're watching like almost every at bat that he has.
Yeah.
His quote unquote slumps feel longer than they actually are. So
and when Ohtani, he misses a baseball, like he doesn't swing and he swings, he doesn't hit it. It looks like 6 outs at a time because he misses.
that's true. But I also just think that like, so he misses 2 games because he has his first child. Congratulations to Shohei and his lovely wife.
Because he's not married to the game. No.
He comes back. Again, he only misses 2 games, goes 0 for 3, 1 for 4, 1 for 5, 0 for 4. And again, you know, one hit or 2 hits over 4 games is the most normal stretch of production at the major league level ever. But I remember thinking, being like, man, oh, Shohei, you know, he must be tired, you know, staying up. He's got this kid now he's got to deal with. And, you know, like, how's this going? Like, is he adjusting? Again, it was 4 games where he, like, didn't do anything cool. And then since then, he has, since that 4-game slump, he has a 1423 OPS. He's got 4 homers and 5 steals and is back to being one of the 2 to 3 best hitters in the league.
So he's not actually on pace to get 50-50. He is on pace right now, if you extrapolate, for 47-47. What a bum.
Wow. Scrub City.
However, he is ahead of his pace from last season at this exact time. Mm-hmm. So through 34 games, he had, I believe, 8 homers and 7 steals. And he really didn't start stealing at an outrageous clip until he got moved into the leadoff spot in mid-June. And from there, the stolen bases. When Mookie got hurt, the bags spiked up and he just started running all the time. Now, can he do 50-50 again? Yes. Why? Why should we expect the pace to kick up enough? Well, I kind of wrote about this, the weather, actually.
Sure.
Stolen bases since the rule changes happened have spiked as the season's gone on, as have home runs. So home runs is self-explanatory, right? Warmer weather, ball carries, it's hotter, pitchers are more tired more easily.
This is what I'm counting on for the Orioles to get to 500.
Exactly.
You know, they're on a decent pace now, but I still think those balls are really going to start flying come July and August.
And that matters for stolen bases too, because when it's warm out, players feel limberer and more likely to run. You have less experienced pitchers and catchers appearing in games. And so in this era of rule changes, the stolen base success rate or like and likelihood and like all of it is higher in July and August than it is earlier in the year. And so all of that tells me that Ohtani he's in range, right? He's definitely in range. Now, what could stop him?
I can think of something.
The pitching.
Yeah. Or, but this is part of it, right? And again, you can give us the latest. I'm sure Dave Roberts continues to be asked about this all the time. The pitching, right? Because we talked about this before the season. We've mentioned it as we've gotten these updates along the way. It's the combination of Will pitching. Let's say he does come back and it's full go and he's pitching once a week and it's all is going great and he's back to being the two-way superstar that he's always been. That's the best case scenario, and we would all love to see that. But in that scenario, just from a, you know, fatigue and durability standpoint, you can imagine he's running less. But then there's also the question of just like, is he going to be missing any time as he builds? Is he going to be missing any games as he builds up? Because when you're going for ridiculous milestones like this, you truly cannot afford to miss many baseball games. And as we know, Ohtani, based on the fact that he, you know, missed two games on the paternity list instead of three, or, you know, he wants to play as many games as he can. So I'm sure regardless of the plan with the pitching, he's going to continue to do that. But that is what's looming over here. Now I think
can I hop in quickly and then we'll talk about the pitching.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get to 50-50, whatever. He feels almost certain to get to 40-40.
Right.
And if he gets to 40-40, he'll be the first player to ever do it twice. And it'll be only the seventh ever 40-40 season. Now, obviously it is easier to do now than ever before because of how steals work, right? Still impressive. Still amazing. But what I think is going to happen is he will end up going like 42, 47. And everyone's going to be like, oh. And then we're going to have to be like, no. Like, this is banana.
Well, especially if like he gets to 40-40, like after throwing six shutout innings or whatever. Like, yeah, that's also on the table, which is what's really exciting. But also, based on the way they've been talking about it, I have no idea when we're going to see that.
Okay, so here's the factoids. Ohtani surgery, September 2023. Second career elbow reconstruction surgery. Second time they opened up his elbow with a scalpel, right? That's all I care about. Smarter people than us know the specifics. I'm not here to speak to that. His recovery timeline has taken notably longer than the average player for a similar type of surgery. That is for two main reasons, in my opinion. One is the toll of hitting that the body has to take on. That is part of it. Two is when he screwed his shoulder up in the World Series and had to get surgery. It was his other shoulder, but he still had to get surgery for it. He still had to do rehab for it. And when he was doing that, even though it's his other shoulder, there's a period of time where you can't do pitching. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that pushed his timeline back a little bit. And he had to do like a recovery rehab process during spring training from that as well. And then I guess I'll say the third thing is that the Dodgers just don't need him as much. They're not as dependent on him right now. We'll talk a little bit about this later and how the Dodgers are hilarious because they're so good. All that's to say, Ohtani is not going to pitch before the All-Star break, it seems. He has not yet thrown breaking balls in his bullpens. He's only throwing fastballs. I believe he might have thrown like a breaking ball in spring training, but since the season has begun, he's kind of backtracked a little bit because he took time off during camp from throwing to hit. So he's only throwing fastballs now. In order to get back onto a big league mound, he first needs to throw all of his pitches at full gas, face live hitters, build up to a point where they're comfortable starting him in a major league game. That process is still going to take some time. I would be surprised if it happens before the All-Star break, okay? That's bucket one. Bucket two is there is a growing unfortunate sense that having Ohtani be what he used to be, this two-way thing, is not worth it, right? That having him be the best center fielder in baseball is the best thing for the Dodgers. For the rest of us, the best thing is for Shohei Ohtani to continue being this two-way unicorn that we've never seen and never will see again, obviously. But because the Dodgers have all these resources and can build a pitching staff without Ohtani, they don't, like, there's an argument to not risk him getting hurt on the mound and missing significant time again as a hitter. Okay. And for that reason, I am skeptical that we will see a traditional Shohei Ohtani start. Here's the baseball, go six, hit at the same time in this postseason. I think we could see it at the end of this regular season when there's less strain and less intensity. But I think in October, their number one priority is to make sure that he is ready to hit, that he has become such a force offensively, such a game changer, that putting him in a position to not be able to do that is lunacy. It's lunacy. Yeah. He has gotten too good at the other thing.
Yes, that is the takeaway. That is the takeaway, which again, as we made this point last year when he was DHing only, is an amazing place to be when you consider where his career began in America, where everyone was making fun of him as a hitter. And it was like, why are you wasting your time trying to hit big league pitching? You throw 100, just go be an awesome pitcher. Right. He's like, okay, sure.
And I think all of this is making me appreciate the Angels for what they provided Ohtani.
It's their greatest achievement in the 20th, drafting Mike Trout and letting Shohei do whatever he wants.
Because
I guess winning the World Series in 2002 would be third on that list.
Congratulations. Because Ohtani, if he had just started with the Dodgers, it was all, quote, too important to let him do what he wanted to the extent that he was allowed to do it in Anaheim, right? Like Anaheim, right.
The DH part of this, because there was no DH in that, like there were other elements influenced why Anaheim was a good fit. So it was a different time then for a lot of reasons, but still, as we think about it now, I think it's a fair point.
A couple more things here. One, I don't expect him to relieve. That's not me reporting something that I was told, right? But it's in a heavy implication. Here's why. For him to pitch in a game, they want him to have the full starter warm-up,
right?
Build up before a start.
100%.
That full routine is going to significantly reduce the likelihood of an injury. There are people in baseball who believe that part of Shohei's injury in 23 was connected to how he came in at the end of the WBC that year, that running in like as the DH after playing a full game and just letting, you know, 90 mile an hour effort sweepers rip in a max effort high leverage spot had an enormous strain on his elbow that came out over time. Now, can you prove that? I don't know. Smart people think that. Okay.
Yeah.
It seems reasonable. And so for that reason, I would be shocked. I would be floored if they use him as a high leverage reliever. And so I think the most likely scenario is Shohei Ohtani opener. I think Dodgers game four bullpen game in, you know, the NLCS, you're going to get Ohtani for two at the top. Like, I think that's what it looks like this season.
Yeah, it is interesting. And when you're talking about what you suggested earlier, and again, I know this is not any explicit reporting, this is just what you're thinking maybe we're headed towards, that in the postseason they wouldn't want him pitching from a you know, high stakes standpoint. It's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because I think a lot of people have talked about it in the standpoint of, we want him to be ready to be full Ohtani in the postseason because that's when it's the most valuable and all these other things. And I think that's also a totally valid way to view this.
Right.
But ultimately, the challenge of all of this is that all of it is unprecedented from a physical recovery and preparation standpoint, which means we have no idea how any of this is the best way to handle it. Neither does he, neither do the Dodgers. And so they're all going to do their best. And we can all hope that we get to see some version of it at some point this season. But either way, the main thing is what you said before. He is too good of a hitter now. He is too valuable of a player at the top of this lineup to do anything to be worth, you know, trying to get greedy and get even more out of him.
Which is a bummer.
Yeah.
Too good.
I mean, again, we saw him do this. Of course, we would love to see him be 2023 Ohtani in the postseason. And maybe we will. But because doubting him has not really gone well for basically anybody at any point. So in that sense, I'm not going to rule anything out. But I think all the points you make are extremely reasonable.
Skill issue. I would describe this as a skill issue. Too much of it.
Yeah. He is the only one with too much skill. It is quite the curse to be burdened with.
Sure. Other Dodgers thing. Here I am sitting watching the Dodgers play the Marlins, the best team in baseball, against what I think is the third worst team. I think these Marlins are better than the Rockies and the White Sox. I think there's an Angels argument. We'll maybe get there one day.
Yeah.
Or soon. And I'm like, what an odd thing. The payroll disparities here are enormous. Andy McCullough wrote a great article about that over at The Athletic last week. I believe it is a $406 million payroll difference between these two teams if you include tax payments.
Yeah.
Right? Which is bigger than every other team. Dodger Stadium has hosted 109 playoff games.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't really process this until you put it in your story.
Dodger Stadium, 109 playoff games in its history, I believe. Marlins Park, zero. It is the only real Major League Baseball stadium right now to never host a postseason game. All due respect to Sacramento and the Yankees spring training facility. The attendance difference is outrageous. The Dodgers drew more fans in their last game, their last home game, which coincidentally was against the Marlins, than the Marlins did all of last weekend combined, like over a weekend, right? Which is when fans put butts in seats. So the difference here is nuts. But then it dawns on me. These teams are more similar than we realize. Because neither of them are optimizing every decision to win as many Major League Baseball regular season games as possible. The Marlins are essentially treating big league games like a minor league game, where they're trying stuff out and the priority is development. Obviously, they're trying to win the games. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the priority is long-term development, and their decision-making in-game, pre-game, lineup construction is all geared towards that, right? All geared towards that. There was when the Dodgers were blowing them out the other day, the Marlins put Augustine Ramirez, who is one of their best young players who could really hit, bad defensive catcher, they just put him behind the dish, right? In the middle of a blowout game, because it was like, screw it. We want him to get as much time as possible. They end up coming back and like losing by a couple of runs. Other, like the Guardians are not doing that, right? The Reds are not doing that. The Marlins and the White Sox are the only teams kind of doing that. And no one's doing it like the Marlins, who are as wonky from an ideological standpoint and new age and pushing the envelope as it gets. They're doing essentially full live practice at 2 o'clock on the field before games. Like, instead of bullpens, they're just having guys face live hitters on the field, right? Which is unprecedented.
Wow. Like, all the time. Not all, just like, day. Oh, he's coming back from injury. Like, oh, no.
Every single day.
Yeah. But that's every where this is how, right. Again, they are pushing the envelope in terms of what rebuilding means and what you do with that kind of experience.
Yes. And the Dodgers are same, but different, because they are out here treating the regular season like it's spring training, right? None of this matters to them until August, because they know they're talented enough to essentially coast, to throw it in cruise control and compile enough wins to finish in first in the division. More teams will join these two buckets of too good to care and not good enough to care as the season goes on, as like if the Tigers open up a 15-game lead in the AL Central, like they'll start being smarter about stuff. Great example. Last night, the Dodgers in this close game, they have relievers who are unavailable, who they are not throwing. Full stop. High leverage arms who will not go into the game. Whereas there are other teams who would maybe push their guys, like the A's, a little bit more in order to win on that given night. Dodgers don't care about that. And so last night they have JP Feiereisen, shouts out. They bring him in for like one day and then option him after the game. And he gives up the walk-off in extra innings. And it's like, whatever. You know, like, we're the Dodgers. We're going to win the games. And so you're just watching these two teams playing each other. And it's like, it's not that they're not trying or it's not entertaining. It's just this bizarre experience.
They are operating. They are they are treating the regular season differently than most other teams for very different and very same reasons. But I think that that is a good observation because, right, normally you just look at this on paper and you say, well, how are the Marlins ever possibly going to beat the Dodgers? It's baseball. You got weird stuff happen. And by the way, like, I do want to kind of, before we take a break, like, by the way, you still have a story to tell that I think you should share with our audience about Shohei, and then we can take a break. But the Marlins are really amazing, like, especially because coming into the season, for how bad we thought they were going to be, like, we assumed it was because they wouldn't be able to hit because none of their hitters had really ever been in the major leagues. Their offense is actually okay, and it's the pitching that is, like, historically awful. Here's a little
that has
fun
a lot
fact.
To do with injuries.
I understand that. But whatever the reason, their starting pitching ERA before last night when Cal Quantrill like was good was the highest in baseball history. It was like 6.71 rotation ERA. Yeah. No team's ever been worse. Now it's, I think, you know, slightly better than the 1996 Tigers. But like that is how they are losing a ton of games, being non-competitive. Now, to your point, some of that is injury related. Some of that is personnel related. Some of that is just, you know, it is what it is. But it is kind of weird how the Marlins have been bad. Has been a little bit different than we expected.
Just one other example of the Dodgers doing whatever they want. Like Max Muncy has generally been terrible this season.
Really bad. Yeah.
Like one really bad.
At yeah. like 180. Yeah.
People are like, oh, I saw an article that was like, oh, should they trade for Arenado? It's like, guess what? You know what the Dodgers are going to do? They're going to give Max Muncy every last opportunity to figure it out at third base because it doesn't matter until October 2nd.
Right.
Right. Let's say Max Muncy sucks for 4 months. It's horrible. And then he like puts it together on August 7th. Right.
Great.
That's a
now
win.
Now Max Muncy's back.
Now you have Max Muncy.
Like, who was a 140 OPS plus last year, right? So it's not like we haven't seen enough to think Max Muncy is totally cooked. And so they're just going to let him kind of figure it out.
And that's okay. And like, that's what they've built for themselves. And I'm sure it's frustrating for other teams for just watch the Dodgers sleepwalk and, you know, pseudo punt games. But it is what it is. Two other quick Dodgers takeaways before I hop into this Ohtani story. One is Ha-Seong Kim. So very different understanding of this player, seeing him in person. He's ripped. Like he's yoked. He is cut and muscular. I thought he was a lot more punchy, wiry infield type. It's a very different athlete than I thought. Like really impressive athlete.
Yeah. And what's interesting about him is like he did not ever have big power numbers in Korea. And so you would think, well, why would he have big power numbers here? But even in AAA, like he was hitting the ball harder and farther than I thought he really could. But yeah, I mean, I having seen him in spring training at the very early days of spring training where he was looking fairly overmatched from just a pitching competition standpoint. But clearly, based on the investment in him, $12 million, like they believe in the athlete that there is growth here to become a potentially a decent. And obviously he can fly. I mean, that was very apparent last night. And I think even the day before.
He's like it's like a Wes Welker type athlete.
Like a slot receiver situation.
It's like slot receiver athleticism where he's like tiny and yoked. And
because he's like five. He's not. He's 5'10", maybe 5'9". Yeah, he's not that tall, but
super cut. So he's impressive. And then Andy Pages has been unbelievable for the last like
that
month
second
now.
The other day.
He hit second last night for the first time in his career. It was a scheduled off day for Mookie. Like, I don't know.
And Teoscar's hurt now. So
Teoscar's hurt. So up comes James Outman to like play sometimes. Again, they just want Dalton Rushing to learn how to play catcher.
Right.
Like that's part of it in AAA. But Pais was, I think he's good. I think he's a good player.
Yeah. What's amazing about him is I believe his defensive metrics in center have also been pretty good when he looked.
Yeah.
He's looked like awful out there at times. So that would be, and he, it's not like he was bad as a rookie, but he was basically completely out of the picture in the postseason, right? Like they did not have any interest in him playing much in October. And so to see how much he's given them so far this season is definitely impressive.
He, in October, started one game.
Yeah. And I don't think it was in the World Series.
It was the clincher against the Mets he started.
Yeah. So I mean, that's how far he had fallen. And it's not like, he had played a lot as a rookie. He was decently productive. But for him to kind of play his way back into now being really good is a big deal, especially because, man, Michael Conforto has been terrible recently. We'll see if he can bounce back. Again, they can afford him to suck.
That's the thing.
But that's another one
in the lineup every day
that Páez is kind of covering for. All right, tell the Ohtani story, then we got to take a break.
Okay, so this was the first game of the series on Monday. I was doing Clubhouse and was talking to Austin Barnes about something for a while. All the media left the room because Clubhouse was closing. I kept talking to Austin Barnes instead of going to do the Dave Roberts scrum because it was a good conversation. So I'm the only guy left in there. I walk out down through the tunnel and then up through the Dodgers dugout. And a lot of the dugouts have this like little waiting room, like this where like the bathroom is. And there's usually like a bunch of medicine balls and like,
yeah, right, weights,
you know, weights and like where the shoes are cleaned.
Exercise bike.
Yeah. Right. And as I'm walking through in the door of this doorway, Will Ireton, Ohtani's interpreter, is like leaning up against the doorway and he's on his phone. And I nod at him. He nods at me. Hello. And I start walking through the doorway and I turn to my right and there's Shohei leg up in the air like he's about to pitch, right, at leg lift, holding a weighted baseball, about to throw it, presumably, you know, 90 miles an hour off of the cinder block wall behind me. And we both freeze in space. I look at him. He looks at me. It was the equivalent of someone like stopping short at a crosswalk almost.
Right.
Right. Like,
you give the car like the Heisman, like, whoa.
You're like, whoa. Or you give him like, thank you so much for not killing me. I look at him. He looks at me. I go, that'd be a hilarious way to die. And then I just kept walking. And then
Shohei,
I just hear,
weighted ball to the face.
And then I just hear bang. And it's the ball slamming full gas against the wall.
There you
Light
go.
Light flashed before my eyes.
If I had been hospitalized by
an Ohtani weighted ball accident, I think that's good for the podcast.
I agree. Good for the podcast. All I'm hearing from that story is that Ohtani's return to pitching delayed by Jake Mintz by about 2 seconds.
Like
you set his timeline back because, not because he like got hurt or anything, but because, again, like every time he throws a ball, he's getting closer to pitching in the big leagues again. And you stopped him from doing that for what it sounds like at least 2 to 5 seconds.
1 to 3. But yeah.
1 to 3. Okay. Well, still, that's a delay is a delay. That's all I'm hearing. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return on Baseball Barbecast, we're going to talk about the best offense in baseball. What? The Seattle Mariners. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Now it's time to talk about a team that inexplicably has the same OPS plus as those Los Angeles Dodgers that we just talked about. Yes, we need to talk about the Seattle Mariners offense.
I am legitimately confused. I watch significantly less of the Mariners than you. And when I do watch the Mariners, it's almost always like the last three innings of a game as I fall asleep.
Right.
Because I'm at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field while they're like doing post game. You know, I'm like following Ryan Stanek around the locker room while the Mariners are putting up 7 runs on the television. And I just don't know what's happening. So if you could hold my hand and explain me, that would be really sweet.
Yeah. So, you know, that first fun fact I gave you that they have the same OPS plus as the Dodgers is obviously a little misleading as, I mean, it's true, but park factor is very relevant here. And as we know, the Seattle Mariners play in the pitcher friendliest ballpark in the league. And the funny thing is like, yeah, they still have some pretty severe home road splits. Like they are still hitting much better on the road, but they have clearly still played a lot of home games and have been scoring enough runs at home to where while the batting average is still not atrocious, right? The past few years, it has been near the very bottom of the league. They are now collecting enough hits to go along with reaching base a ton and slugging a good amount that this is just a really good offense. So I think we can do this pretty simply, which is just like, all right. I mean, you can pull up the Baseball Reference page and look at who has the good stats, and that's very simple. But some of those players are more important than others in terms of understanding how you get to over 5 runs a game for the Seattle Mariners.
The Seattle Mariners have the second lowest home batting average.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. 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 Again, like hits or not, they're doing this without too many hits. But what they are doing, but what they have been doing better is not striking out all the time. They were walking a lot last year, and that was kind of what was keeping their offense afloat when they were still winning. Remember, they still won a good number of games last year, and a lot of that was because they were reaching base and they had enough timely hits, and they were able to hit the home run, especially on the road. But now it is just a more average amount of swing and miss combined with they're hitting the ball really hard. I mean, you look, it's not just the overall, okay, OPS plus, you know, runs per game, like hard hit rate, barrel rate, like all of that stuff is near the top of the league. So that is what is, I think, most encouraging and most convincing about this start. Although we should obviously talk about the personnel involved, because I think that's probably where some people are even more confused when you see some of the lineups they are running out right now.
So their strikeout rate last year was second highest in baseball, and now they're like middle of the pack. How sustainable is that? Like, is that backed up by swing decision stuff?
Yeah.
Like, are they, I'll let you go ahead.
Yes. So, I mean, they definitely still have hitters that are prone to chase a lot, right? Guys like Randy Arozarena and Julio Rodriguez. And then you also have guys like Luke Raley who will absolutely whiff. And Cal Raleigh, right? Obviously. But it seems like they've all improved just enough. And especially when they've been getting into deeper counts, it's been more likely to end up with a walk than a strikeout. And it's not like they're all suddenly just become contact hitters. Like the general profile has mostly been the same. But when you see the degree to which Julio's been able to cut down the strikeouts and increase the walks, you see like Randy, again, he swings a lot and he'll whiff a lot, but he's always been able to draw a lot of walks. Like it's been balanced out just enough. And when you combine that with real power that you're obviously getting from Cal Raleigh, who is trying to become, I guess, only the third catcher ever to lead baseball in home runs, joining, I think, Salvador Perez and Johnny Bench. I mean, is he going to end up doing that? We'll see. He still has the league lead right now. And then you have this unbelievable Jorge Polanco resurgence, which we can kind of talk about as well. But that would be from a process standpoint, that's what I've kind of seen. Again, like they're still swinging a lot. They're still chasing a lot of pitches. But when they're getting into those deep counts, I think they've been a little bit more productive. It's ended up with more walks than strikeouts.
So I'm on True Media right now, our secret weapon. Their in-zone whiff is up, barely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And their chase is up, barely. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I'm like, shouldn't the strikeouts also be up? Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's really cursory. I'm admitting I have not looked into this more than a couple of queries. It feels to me like the strikeout rate should be higher than it is and might revert. It might have some mean reversion.
I think that's reasonable. But again, if they are still, they have the highest walk rate in baseball, right? So again, they're not expecting to suddenly become the Padres where they have the highest batting average and the lowest strikeout rate, but it has been a good of enough mix.
Yeah.
When you also combine, we're just talking about scoring runs, like especially early on the season, they're also running the bases extremely aggressively. And I think they're top 4 or 5 in steals. Now that's gone down a little bit since Dylan Moore was out and Victor Robles is out and Ryan Bliss is out. So some of their speed has gone down a little bit, but that has also helped them kind of produce when we're talking about the collective offense.
So I think I agree with you that like Cal Raleigh is at worst the third best catcher in baseball. And that is, to me, sustainable. Now, will he have a 177 OPS plus, 77 points above league average all year? Probably not.
Probably not.
Right.
But he's going to hit 30 home runs. Like, he's going to hit 30 home runs, and he's going to drive in 80, 90 runs. Sure. And like, that's astounding.
I believe in that. I believe in Randy.
Yeah. So
Randy Rosarena has looked really good, mm-hmm. is my understanding.
Yeah. Randy, and he's had like a ridiculous number of like clutch hits also. So like, his big moments have felt especially impactful. But like I said, I keep repeating it, but he gets hit by pitches and he draws a lot of walks. So while he's also only hitting 218, he's got a 131 OPS plus because he's reaching base 37% of the time, and the power has generally been there. And he's basically been exactly what you could have possibly hoped for a player like that. And especially because like that profile, seeing, he sees a lot of pitches. I know he likes to swing, but he sees a lot of pitches per at bat. And that just helps the whole offense. It just helps everything kind of flow a lot better.
Interesting. And then Polanco, like,
yeah.
I don't even know what to do with that.
So the other players we need to talk about here are Polanco. Okay, so Jorge Polanco last season was essentially playing on a bum knee for the whole season. And he gets surgery on it after the year. And last year was his first year. You know, remember when the Mariners get him, he's coming off basically three consecutive above average seasons with the Twins. And you're thinking, this is a perfect fit. They have been looking for a second baseman for years since Robinson Cano. Like, it is just, they have not had this spot figured out. He seemed like the perfect addition by all accounts. And while he wasn't a complete catastrophe, it was obviously a disappointment. He had a 296 on base. The power did not translate. I mean, it was okay, all things considered, relative to some of the other guys that they brought in recently, but it felt like a letdown. But because it was so underwhelming and because of his injury history, clearly nobody believed in him to bounce back that quickly because nobody wanted him in free agency. He's not that old. You know, he was entering his age 31 season, and he had a pretty good track record, former All-Star, and yet nobody wanted him back, which I read as not a good sign. You know, the fact that there were clearly other teams that probably could have needed an infielder like him and nobody wanted to give him even $10, $15 million told me, uh-oh, he might be cooked in the eyes of the league. And instead, it's the opposite. He made a slight swing adjustment, particularly from the left side, or more of a stance adjustment to make him a little bit more closed. And he's just absolutely pummeling the ball. I mean, we talk about the underlying metrics. It's wild. I've never really seen anything quite like this. And it is really, really impressive. What is really funny is that he's still sort of injured, still sort of dealing with an oblique injury. I believe he just played second base and batted right-handed. You know, he's a switch hitter for the first time in weeks, just in the last couple of days. So how he's actually going to, you know, contribute from the right side, we'll see, and how much he can contribute defensively, because they were going to be playing him at third base coming into the year, and now that's changed. Now they're going with this rookie, Ben Williamson. But what Polanco's been, it's completely sensational. So, of course, he's not going to have an 1100 OPS for the rest of the season. But even if he's like a version of like the All-Star version that they got, that he was with the Twins at times, like, that's not completely hard to believe when you consider his track record. And that also has brought this offense back to up to a very special level.
One last thing about the Mariners, and then we can take another break.
Yeah.
They have had the fifth largest jump in playoff odds. Mm-hmm. And the second largest jump in the AL from the beginning of the season till now. So I have a sheet that kind of tracks this all for me.
Tigers, I assume.
Tigers are number one.
Yep.
Cubs, Padres, Giants, Mariners. But what's more interesting than that to me is that they're fifth in playoff odds. Like, forget difference.
Sure. They have the total overall. Excuse me.
Fourth. They have the fourth highest playoff odds this morning, Wednesday, May 7th, per Fangraphs. It is the Dodgers, Tigers, Yankees, and Mariners. Part of that is because the rest of the AL West looks like a crap show.
Yes. But whatever.
But,
you know,
that's
a huge deal.
What?
I mean, those odds got pretty high last year as well, and they blew a 10-game lead. But I think, it is important to recognize like the position that they have put themselves in, and part of that is because of the division. Part of that is how they played. The last thing I'll say about the offense, the one quick one that has to be mentioned, is that J.P. Crawford looks back to being 2023 J.P. Crawford. And he was my number one X factor coming into the season. Him having a 416 on base, maybe that's a little high, but like, he will get on base. And that has totally changed the complexion of what this offense has been able to do. because he was a non-factor. He was bad, actively bad last season. That is a huge deal. And then Julio, we have to mention, because I know that he, because of the standard he's held to in the contract that he's on, it's like, oh, why is he not winning MVPs? And I get that. I understand you want that OPS plus to be higher than it is. He looks good. If you are watching Julio, he looks good. He's looked way worse earlier in the season than he has generally. Is he still chasing? Yes. With the more walks, he's hitting the ball hard. The BABIP's really low right now, so you can imagine him getting maybe some positive regression in the coming months. Homered last night. He's still one of the best defensive center fielders in the league, impacting the game on the bases. He is the least of my concerns. Like, I know that the outside league, oh, why isn't Julio? He's supposed to be the face of the league. Why isn't he an MVP? Like, he looks good to me. I'm super not concerned about him.
It's also a reminder of why you give out that type of contract to a player like that, because the floor is so high. That's what it's about as much as it is the ceiling. He, since his debut in 2023, right? Opening day 2023, 14th most F4 in baseball. 14th. Now, that's not 4. It's not 8. But, like, that is well within the range that everyone in Seattle who decided to give him the contract is happy and comfortable with, right? He is ahead of Kyle Tucker. He is ahead of Ketel Marte. He's ahead of Matt Olson. Like, he's ahead of Tatis. I know that's because Tatis, you know, fell off a motorcycle and did steroids. But
he's playing every day. He's on track for another 4 to 6 more season. Like, he's doing his thing. And by the way, there is still another, like, epic hot streak in there. Like, he is going to have a month where he has, you know, a 150 OPS plus, and he does look like one of the best hitters in baseball. So
I think
combined, here you are. You got a hell of an offense.
I think if you're talking about players in baseball that you would want to start a franchise around right now for the next 10 years, Julio's still a top 10 pick in that conversation, if not top 5. Like, I would take Corbin over him. I would take Bobby Witt's your first pick, right?
Yep.
I would take Bobby over him. There's a Soto argument, I would say.
Yeah, again, but if you're doing, like, the under 25, under 26, like we've done, he is still way up there. And I feel like he is absolutely part of this. And again, though, the funny thing is, like, there are still parts of this lineup that are really, really bad. And so that is where you're going to have to see, as some of these guys off to ridiculous starts like Polanco, you know, start to cool off, how does this lineup really look? But then you're also kind of banking on the pitching to be better than it has been as the season progresses, which I think is reasonable to expect once George Kirby returns. But anyway, that's the Mariners offense. If you have any other questions, let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to go around the league. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. I want to apologize to our listeners for underachieving. Because this week in the baseball world, a fellow baseball podcaster proved what was possible. As the Texas Rangers have hired former big league multi-time all-star and hardball podcaster Brett Boone to be their hitting coach. Brett Boone, who hosts a podcast aptly named the Brett Boone Podcast.
It's a good one.
Had they come up with that one? It's like a band that's named after one guy.
Pretty good. It's fine. You know what you're getting. Nothing wrong with that.
Anyway, here's Brett Boone. Never coached at any level since his playing career ended in affiliated baseball. And he will now be telling Corey Seager how to swing.
Josh Young, third baseman for the Texas Rangers, was asked about this move. This is in Kennedy Landry's story, former podcast guest and future podcast guest, Kennedy Landry. We love Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Josh Young said, "We've got a guy with a lot of big league experience. His brother coaches the Yankees. He's got a podcast. I feel like he knows ball. I feel like that'll be good for us. We've got a podcast. We know ball."
Can I say something?
What's going on?
Having a podcast is not a prerequisite to hitting instruction. I I can't believe I even have to say that, Josh.
He's got a podcast. I feel like he knows ball is so good. Now, I will say, in Brett's and Josh's defense, my brother does not coach the Yankees. So that's another thing that he said. His brother coaches the Yankees. Which, is that true?
What do you mean?
Does Aaron Boone coach the Yankees? I think, again, we're nitpicking. Josh Young's choice of words here. However, we've Aaron talked about Boone, this before. It is very amusing how we talk about how players refer to managers versus head coaches at the college level versus different things, different sports.
Other sports.
So anyway, does Aaron Boone coach the Yankees?
Coaches the Yankees less than any other Yankees coach.
Bingo. That was what
he manages the Yankees.
Sure does.
The most.
Absolutely. Anyway, we understand what he's saying. This is a fascinating decision. As we talked about on Monday, Donnie Ecker out, Brett Boone in. One of the things that has been a little bit, I don't know about disappointing, but it is an interesting dynamic that is so predictable because we've seen this in other places. We saw this in Seattle. We've seen this in other spots where it's like the hitting coach who has kind of been grinding as a hitting coach and like doesn't have a lot of, has never played in the big leagues, but like they're like part of the modern thing and they get booted. And then you bring in the guy that's hit a bunch of homers in the big leagues. And what do all the players say? Well, oh, this guy's a big leaguer. This guy knows how to do it.
Oh yeah.
What's better than this, right? They did it with the Mariners last year. Edgar Martinez. I mean, it's Edgar Martinez.
What do you mean? This happened with the Yankees in 2023 when they fired Dylan Lawson, who's, you know, kind of a new age guy with no professional playing experience.
Yep.
And they fire him and they bring in another podcaster, Sean Casey.
Sean Casey. Perfect thing. Like Sean Casey, he's got all these hits in the big league. Of course we're gonna listen to him. So again, this is not anything personal to Brett Boone or Sean Casey or Edgar Martinez or anything, these guys, right? Because some of them, I'm sure, are awesome hitting coaches. But this is yet another great, we already talked about this, like the concept and premise of a hitting coach is so interesting and we will never understand it. But it really is, when they talk about new voice and whatever that means, this is just an amazing example of that. You know, Brett Boone apparently played for Bochy 1 year in San Diego, like 25 years ago, I guess stayed in touch and was still connected to Bruce Bochy.
You clearly don't listen to the Brett Boone podcast.
I heard the Michael Young was the original connection that they ran into each other at a USC baseball game. And he was like, hey, man, our offense sucks. Would you consider? Well, Michael Young didn't really say it. But then Bruce Bochy calls Brett Boone and he's like, hey, we need you. And Brett Boone's like, all right.
I'll be there. Bye.
I'll be there. Bye. Good reference that nobody gets. So it's again, like, and of course, what happens? First game against our dear friend Lucas Giolito, just knocking the ball around the yard. Woo! Here we go. And Brett Boone, they keep cutting to him, and the broadcast just keeps cutting to Brett Boone, just sitting there, and he's like, and you can see him kind of chopping it up with the hitters.
He should have put on a lab coat and like a stethoscope. He's like some beakers. He's like in the lab.
And it's like Brett Boone, it's like, you can tell. Oh, it's like, oh, you look right there. He just told him, he's talking about Lucas. Like, look for this pitch here. And Donnie Ecker wasn't doing that. He wasn't. And now the Rangers are going to score a million runs a game for the rest of the season.
Let's break it down with an iota of seriousness here for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Hitting coaches are meat shields. They are there to be fired when things go wrong. Okay? It's that simple. That's the job. Whenever a hitting coach gets fired, right, there's two different types of things can happen. This past year in Baltimore, they fired everybody, basically, right? And they, except for Cody Ashe, I guess, and they brought in like all these new voices at one time. That means that they're legitimately trying to change the overall tone of what is being
Twins
taught.
Did the same thing.
Right.
Twins did the same thing. Yep.
When the Yankees fired Dylan Lawson, they kept the two guys under Dylan Lawson, who I believe are still there.
Yeah.
And so it's like they just killed off a guy in order. You see what I'm saying? Like, not to say that Dylan was perfect as the hitting coach with the Yankees,
no.
But the job of the hitting coach is to take the heat and get canned in the event that things go sideways.
Yeah.
And it is the perfect place. And I don't think this is a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's an entertaining thing. for a GM or a baseball operations person to hit the revert to old school button.
It is the spot. It's the perfect spot. So perfect. Because it's like, they were doing it on the broadcast. Yeah, I don't know. This might have been the Red Sox broadcast. Like, yeah, I don't know how much Brett Boone's going to, you know, care about analytics. And it's like, again, we're just like saying words that don't.
It doesn't matter. Brett Boone just got hired to, you know, talk about feel and, you know, pat some guys on the ass after they hit long balls and throw.
Tell them to hit it off the toss.
Front flips. It's fine. It's all cueing. And if the combination of voices works, it works. If Brett Boone was taking Josh Jung to a facility in January to rework specific swing mechanics about ball flight, I would be concerned because I don't think that's something he's capable of doing. I think that Brett Boone is probably very qualified to be a human being in a major league dugout.
Sure. Sure.
That's, you know, around and helping to prepare. I think it's totally fine. Now, I also think what's unfortunate about it is then you have like guys like Donnie Ecker and Dylan Lawson, right? Who are then like almost villainized as like the new age nerd who can't relate to human beings. Like Donnie Ecker was the hitting coach of a World Series winning team.
2 years ago.
It's like, I find it very hard to believe that he completely changed as a coach over those 2 years.
And he's going to get hired somewhere else just the way that Dylan Lawson did and the way that Jarrett DeHart did and the way that all these other hitting coaches, like these guys will pop other places because they still have good reputations that will stand up most of the time. And in this case, with the Rangers in particular, I think why this is a notable storyline to just monitor as the season goes on is the personnel involved. This lineup should not be 29th in OPS plus or runs per game or whatever. There's just no way. And is that Donnie Ecker's fault?
I guarantee
probably not. But that is something where I can say these players should not be this bad. And so in that sense, it's very simple.
I guarantee you, if they had hired a different podcaster like Jake Mintz or Beg Rowley, right, or anybody else.
She's got a podcast. She knows ball.
She knows ball. To be the hitting coach, right? The Rangers would have a better OPS plus post-hire than pre-hire. They could have hired any human being in the world that wasn't like a criminal or a hellish hang, and things would get better.
Right. I mean, I've wondered this, like if we could do an experiment, like a control versus experiment where it's just like no hitting coaches. Teams are not allowed to have hitting coaches. Let's find out who actually has the good hitters and or who actually has the good hitting coaches. Anyway, so we'll see how this goes. Speaking of Rangers hitters, Evan Carter
Barack is back. Obama, he has a podcast.
He knows ball.
Bruce Springsteen.
He's got a podcast. I feel like he knows ball. I feel like that'll be good for us.
Can you read it one more time?
Again, the first thing he says was, I understand. We've got a guy with a lot of big experience. His brother coaches the Yankees. But then, direct quote, he's got a podcast. I feel like he knows ball. I feel like that'll be good for us.
Woo!
That's us, baby. Evan Carter's back with the Rangers. You know what? Let's just see how Evan Carter does. Let's see how this goes. Leody Taveras, by the way, on the Mariners now. He's gone. Longest tenured Ranger, 10 years within the organization. Now he's playing for the Mariners. They're going to hope they can do Victor Robles 2.0. We'll see how that goes. But Evan Carter's, I guess, just going to be playing center field for the Rangers now. He's still, I think, 22, which is amazing. He wasn't really hitting that well in AAA, but let's see how this goes because he is certainly a very interesting character for this team moving forward. So we won't have the big Evan Carter conversation right now, but I'm excited to see how it looks as we move forward. Him and Brett Boone, who I'm sure Evan Carter knows so much about. Maybe he listens to the podcast.
The Carter season 3. Other things around baseball, the Blue Jays sign Jose Urania and Spencer Turnbull for starting pitching help. You have thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Urania, he was like on the Mets briefly and he just pitched the other day. Urania, whatever. Spencer Turnbull intrigues me. He was awesome for the Phillies a year ago. Like at this time a year ago, if you sorted ERA starting pitching in baseball, he was like top five. And then they moved him to the bullpen because they still had Taiwan Walker and they were like, Spencer Turnbull, this wasn't supposed to be your job. And then he wasn't very good. And then he got hurt and was out for the year. And then nobody signed him. There could be reasons why people didn't sign him. But the point is like the Blue Jays clearly do not have this second level depth on the mound whatsoever. And so this is exactly the kind of team I would expect to take a flyer on Spencer Turnbull, who's still building up. And if he can be 80% of what he was last April, like that could be a huge deal for them as they try and remain relevant in the AL East. So I'm intrigued by that signing.
Last thing before we get out of here, the East-West Classic. No, not the East-West Bowl.
Yeah, that was, I don't know if Osmataz Buckshank is competing in this game. This is something a lot more real and a lot more cool. So last year, in Birmingham, Alabama, we had the Rick Wood Classic. This was a game that MLB organized to kind of celebrate one of the more important baseball places in America, which is the oldest operating ballpark that we have in, I believe, North America, and or certainly in the United States. And we had this incredible game, which, of course, ultimately, tragically, coincided with the death of Willie Mays. And so that whole week ended up being, of course, kind of a honoring a celebration of Willie Mays' life. And so I was wondering, like, okay, are they going to play? How are they going to continue? Because they renovated Rickwood Field, which is, of course, a very old facility, to become this incredible venue for this game. And I was curious, like, okay, how is this going to evolve? How are they going to continue to use this? Are they going to send teams to Rickwood Field every year? And it seems like maybe that will happen in the future. But this year, we are having something very different, which is a game that they actually did have last year in Cooperstown, actually, which is essentially a celebration of Black baseball and gathering an incredible who's who of the greatest Black players from the last 10, 20, 30 years to play in what is essentially a pickup game. And what's not to love? I mean, this is a great thing. I remember seeing clips of this last year and I remember being like, oh, wow, like I wish this was getting even more attention than it was. And now with this amount of promotion and doing it at Rick Wood and seeing these rosters, like this is going to be extremely cool. And it'll be around the same time. It'll be June 19th. And I mean, just the players involved here, it's awesome.
A celebration of Black baseball and Jake Peavy.
Jake Peavy still getting the invite here. But I mean, yeah, it's you know, who you would expect in terms of the people who have been involved in a lot of these efforts, whether it's involved with the Players Alliance, with MLB. Of course, we have CC Sabathia involved, but a lot of players that like I haven't necessarily thought about or seen as much in public, whether it's a Justin Upton, whether it's Matt
Scott
Kemp,
Hairston.
Right. Scott Hairston, there's Prince Fielder. Getting to see Prince Fielder compete in something like this is really cool. Of course, Mike Cameron. This will be a very cool game, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this ends up looking like.
Career F4 for the East team, 377.1. Career F4 for the West team, 366.5. So they are separated by just 5 wins of replacement.
That's a lot. My math is bad. It's pretty close.
It's like 11. 11 wins.
They're listing there. We got Gary Sheffield involved in this. We got Ryan Howard. This is a lot of major league experience. Yeah. And it's awesome. So I'm excited to see how this goes. And I'm hopefully it gets the proper promotion it deserves leading up to it.
Congrats to Xavier Scruggs. He of 0.0 career war getting into this game, friend of the program, because it is the perfect example of he has a podcast, he knows ball.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Shouts out
Xavier Scruggs. He's again, we see him on TV. He does know ball for sure. And he's a major leaguer. So put him in the game.
Not us.
Not us. We certainly are not qualified, even though we have a podcast and we like to think that we know ball. That's it. I need to get back to preparing for the NHL draft. Yep. Our Sabres did not win the lottery, which Good was start, absolutely though. Devastating as they had, I believe, the 7th best odds and fell to the 10th pick, which is just kind of an introduction to how painful this fandom is going to be. So I got to get in to start digging, grinding some tape, figure out if this Roger McQueen guy is worth the risk with all of his injury track history and track record. I'm a little worried there because very talented player, a lot of skill, but those back issues are concerning me. So I'm not sure if I want to go with Roger McQueen at pick 10. But listen, this Sabres fandom, this is the very beginning. And I hope I've got some feedback. People telling us, don't do it. Turn back. You know, you can't do this to yourselves. No.
You're like the waiter telling me that the plate is hot. Come on. I'm going to touch it. What are you doing?
Yeah. We're all in here. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, I think that's it. Thank you to TJ Brassel for producing. Thank you, Jake Mintz. Enjoy the rest of your time in Miami. And we'll be back on Friday. A little special guest coming on Friday. Looking forward to that. But until then, email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We will talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.